Nedarim Perik Dalad Mishnah Yud 4:10. We continue with various machloks in between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, where Beis Shammai is lenient, Beis Hillel is machmir, and there are four separate topics in this Mishnah. The first is talking about Nedarim in the context of marriage. So a neder, as you'll recall, is when a person makes something prohibited as if it were restricted like a korban, like a sacrificial item. And that really can go in two different directions, meaning I can say that your tennis shoes are forbidden to me as if they were a korban, I can't get benefit from them. Or I could say my tennis shoes are restricted to you and you cannot get benefit from them. And one thing that I cannot say, of course, is that your tennis shoes are restricted to you. Since they're not mine, I can't restrict them on you. But even if they were yours, I could restrict them on me because I can say my person won't get benefit from your tennis shoes that I could do. So in our Mishnah, the context is marriage and the husband is restricting intimacy with his wife, benefit from intimacy with his wife. So it cannot be the case that he is saying that the wife can't get benefit from him, because that would be kind of like him saying she can't use her own tennis shoes. Since the wife has rights within the context of marriage for shar, ksus, and ona, the husband has to provide her with food and clothing and intimacy, so she has a right. So that wouldn't work. But a person could say that he won't get benefit from his wife. And although, of course, the upshot of that would be the wife is you know, left without her own rights and being fulfilled, but the neder would be binding. So the question our mission wants to ask is, how long could this go on for and the wife not be entitled to a divorce, a get, and to be paid out her ksuba because she's not getting what she's entitled to in the marriage? So that's the machlokas, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai say 2 weeks, Beis Hillel say 1 week. That's the amount of time you have, which the husband could sort of figure out. Sometimes you can do hataras nedarim and undo a neder and the like. But after that, the wife could take her husband to Beis Din and say, "This is, you know, the Beis Din will say this is not okay, and therefore either has to be done immediately, resolved, or else you have to give her a get and pay her ksuba." So Beis Shammai understand the limit being 2 weeks. They derive it from the story of the case in the Gemara. The case in the Chumash of a woman who gives birth to a baby girl, and then she becomes forbidden to her husband for 14 days. And Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and the husband kind of, so to speak, did that to himself. So similarly, if he does this to himself, restricting the intimacy in marriage, so then, you know, that's within the bounds of reasonable. But beyond that, it's not reasonable for her to expect, and therefore she can demand a divorce. Beis Hillel say that's not a very common event, having girls. The basic framework that we should see is what's kind of normal is the restrictions of Nida, which are much more frequent. And as far as the Torah is concerned, that's a 7-day restriction. The rabbis ended up making it a little longer, but from the Torah perspective, it's a 7-day thing. And therefore, the Beis Hillel say 7 days is all you get. More than 7 is too much and grounds for divorce. And that will be true, by the way, even if this husband doesn't have obligations to his wife every 7 days, meaning there are situations if a person is a camel driver, says the Mishnah Ksubas, it's 30 days. If he's a sailor, it could be 6 months even. But the point is, even if he's a sailor and he's really only obligated in the midst of Onah every 6 months, but, you know, it could be sooner and she can kind of hope for that and, you know, whatever. But if he makes a formal netter, restricting it, it's obviously driving a wedge between them and says Beis Hillel, at that point, 1 week is all you get to resolve this, or you have to give a get. That's the first case of the Mishnah. Halacha is like Beis Hillel. The Mishnah says inside, Hamadir es ishto mitashmish amita. If one prohibits getting benefit from his wife in the context of marriage, Beis Shammai omrim shtei shabbosos. Beis Shammai say this can go for a total of 2 weeks before it's grounds for divorce. And Beis Hillel omrim shabbos echas. They say just one shabbos is all you're entitled to, and beyond that, it is grounds for divorce already. That's the first case of the Mishnah. The second case of the Mishnah, new point altogether. It has to do with bringing korbanos after having a child. So there's a mitzvah after a woman has a child, she has to bring korbanos. It's both a chatas and a ola, okay? And until she brings her korbanos, she is essentially got a vestige of tumah that completes her tumah status as a yoledes. And after she brings her korbanos, at that point she'll be able to once again eat from sacrificial meats and go into the Beis HaMikdash, but not before. Now, if a woman had, let's say, 2 children, and after the first child she didn't bring her korbanos, when she goes the second time, after her second child, she'd have to bring 2 sets of korbanos, one for each of the children. Okay? All that said, if a woman even miscarries, and during her pregnancy she loses the child, So then still she has to bring korbanos for that. Unless the miscarriage occurs during the window of time, which is called the time of her demei tohar, her pure blood. What that means is, if a woman has a baby boy, so for 7 days she's tamea, and after the 7 days she can go to the mikveh and she's muteras labala, she can now begin with her husband again. And for the next 33 days, 7 plus 33 meaning a total of 40, next 33 days, if she bleeds, even if she sees uterine blood and she knows the uterine blood, that blood is not considered to be tamei, it's tahor, and she could continue to be with her husband. After 40 days, then she now has to bring her korbanos, okay? If it's a girl that she gave birth to, so then she's 14 days restricted from her husband. That was sort of referenced in the previous part of the Mishnah, Beisham HaShita. And after 14 days of Tumah from being Yoledes, there's 66 days of Dam Tohar, of Tahor blood, where even if the blood comes, it's still, she's still Muteras Labayla to her husband. And then after the total of 14 plus 66 is 80. After 80 days, then she'll be able to bring her Korbanos and become Tahora fully once again. Now, if a woman miscarries during her Demei Tohar period, so meaning when we had a girl, she has 66 days of Yemei Tohar. If in those 66 days she meanwhile got pregnant and lost the baby, even if the baby is more than 40 days into its gestation, because that's really the requirements to have to bring the korban, has at least 40 days of gestation, of like incubation inside her, if you will. So she would be exempt because it's within the Demei Tohar period. Okay? So that doesn't count as having a miscarriage. In contrast, if the miscarriage happened outside of, you know, a regular part of her marriage, not inside those 66-day window of Demei Tohar, then the miscarriage also obligates bringing korbanos as part of her tahara process. The question our mission wants to answer is, what happens if the woman miscarries after giving birth to a girl, then she has a miscarriage on the night of the 81st day, meaning 80 days are up? Tomorrow morning, she'll be entitled to bring her korbanos and become fully tahor. But at nighttime, you can't bring korbanos. So what happens if she has a miscarriage that night on the night of the 81st, which precedes the day of the 81st, where the window hadn't opened up yet for her to actually be able to bring korbanos, but the window has certainly closed in terms of her demei tohar. So is that miscarriage on the 81st day that night, is that obligating a new set of korbanos, a second set of korbanos? Or no, since the window hadn't opened yet for her to bring korbanos, it's still doesn't obligate her in a second set of korbanos. That's Machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. And Beis Shammai's opinion is, since the window hasn't opened yet to bring korbanos, even if she had the baby on the 81st, if she had a miscarriage on the 81st, the night of the 81st, she is exempt from bringing a korban, hence lenient opinion. And Beis Hillel say no, she has to bring a korban because 80 days are up, and now it's within the window is closed, if you will, of the Demei Tohar. Okay, that's the Mishnah in a nutshell. Inside it says, Hamapeles Laor Shmonum Ve'echad. A woman who has a miscarriage on the night of the 81st day, since she gave birth to a baby girl. Beishame Pocha Mina Korban. Beishame say, listen, she can't bring korbanos yet, so it's still like the window of not being obligated is still open. Whereas Beisil Machayim, Beisil say, no, 80 days are up, the May Tohar is up, and therefore the miscarriage on the 81st day obligates her on a second set of korbanos. Halacha, I guess, like Beis Hillel, right? The third case of this Mishnah has to do with the mitzvah of tzitzis, but tzitzis that's applied to a linen garment. So now here is the rub. There's a mitzvah from the Torah to wear tzitzis on your four-cornered garments. Of course, you know that. Now, tzitzis actually incorporates two separate mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah to put the strings, right? The gedilim on the corners of your garments. There's a separate mitzvah of the Taryag that one of those strings, or whatever, some of those strings, should be tchelis. Now, people misunderstand what tchelis means. They think tchelis simply means blue, because that's the modern Hebrew meaning of the word tchelis, like a light blue. However, when the Pasuk talks about tchelis and Chazal talk about tchelis, they mean wool that's dyed blue. You can't have tchelis if you don't have wool, which means you're going to have woolen strings attached to your, if you have a linen garment, your linen garment. And the problem is, there's a separate mitzvah in the Torah that you may not wear garments that combine wool and linen together. That's called shatnas. So you have a problem. Now the good news is that the psukim that have these two mitzvahs are back to back. One pasuk I should say, says lo silbash shatnas tzemer ufishtim yachdav. You may not wear shatnas, i.e., wool and linen together. But the very next pasuk says, "Gadilim ta'aselach," you should make these fringes, these tassels for yourself, referring to the tzitzis, al arba kanfos ksuscha ashit techaseba, on the four corner garments that you cover yourself with. So now what does that mean? The back-to-back, the juxtaposition, the smichut of these two verses teach us the general principle of if you have a mitzvah ase and a lo sase, a positive commandment and a negative commandment, and they are mutually exclusive, you cannot do one without violating the other. The rule is that mitzvahs ase doche los ase. The positive commandment overrules, overrides the negative commandment. Again, if you could have, if there's a way to do both, then you should do both. You must do both. But if you can't, you have to choose. The rule is if you have a single positive commandment against a single negative commandment, the positive commandment overrules and takes priority. And the basis of that general rule is our very topic over here. The smichut, the juxtaposition of the mitzvah of tzitzis and the prohibition of shatness. So, fine and good. Let's talk about tzitzis for one more moment here. Tzitzis is a daytime mitzvah. It's a machlokas rishonim. Does that mean daytime clothing or just the daytime hours? Be that as it may, if you're wearing pajamas at night, there's definitely no mitzvah to wear tzitzis, even if it's a four-corner garment. And during the daytime, for sure, if it's daytime clothing and daytime hours, you must wear four tzitzis on your four-corner garment. So here's the tricky thing. What happens if you have sadin, I'll call them bed sheets, right? Like a blanket, a bed sheet, which in the time of the Mishnah, they would sleep in during the nighttime, and they would wrap themselves like a toga during the day. So at nighttime, it's bedding, and it's not chayav in tzitzis. But in the daytime, it's clothing, it's like a toga that you wear, and it is chayav in tzitzis. So what's going to happen is, if you take a linen bed sheet, and it during the day you have tzitzis attached to it, at nighttime, it stops being obliged to have tzitzis, the techelis is no longer a mitzvah. In which case, you have, if you have a woolen string attached to your linen bed sheets, you have shatness, and you can't sleep in it. So the question is, and that's the point of our Mishnah here, what happens if you have sadin, linen bed sheets, which double as toga during the day? Should you be attaching tzitzis to them or not? So everyone agrees, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai both agree, that midoraisa, of course, it's a four-corner garment. If you're wearing it, you have to put tzitzis on. However, Beis Shammai is going to say, well, wait, stop. We're going to make a din derabanan, kind of like the din derabanan we have not to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because someone might come to, you know, carry the shofar for almost in the Shul Rabbim and violate Shabbos. We're saying, listen, we're not putting any tzitzis on bed sheets that double as togas made out of, with that are shatness, because at the end of the day, at nighttime, you might end up wearing the shatness or sleeping in the shatness, covering yourself with the shatness, and that would be an avera. So therefore, Beis Shammai says you shouldn't put tzitzis on such a four-cornered bed sheet slash garment, whereas Beis Hillel say, no, we don't make such a rabbinic enactment. This is a toga during the day. You wear it, and you need tzitzis, even though it's made out of linen, and the tzitzis are made out of wool, and that will be shatness. It's still the mitzvah. You should do it, and you have to be careful at night not to sleep in such a thing or under such a thing. That's the Mishnah in a nutshell, this part of the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is inside. Sadin betzitzis, when it comes to this linen bedsheet toga thing that you're going to have tzitzis on, Beis Shammai poacher, Beis Shammai say, no, don't do it. Don't put tzitzis on, because it midrabanan, lest you come to sleep in shanas and do the Isra Doraisa. Uveis Hillel mechayv, and Beis Hillel say, no, it's four-corner garment, you're wearing during the day, you must put on tzitzis, and just be careful, the rabbis aren't forbidding it, but be careful at night not to wear shanas. Okay. The last case of this Mishnah has to do with a topic that's called Kvias Peris Lamaisras, which is in the content of this Mishnah. Here is actually a Mishnah in this fourth parak of Maseches Maisras, the whole Maseches Maisras. And most of what Maseches Maisras deals with is when is food subject to tithing requirements. So here's the basic idea. The basic idea is that when you harvest food, the obligations take trumas and maestras meaning the gift to the lady, you don't separate it, don't have to separate it, until two conditions are met. Number one, gemar malacha, the finishing of the processing of the produce, and also, rias pnei abayis, that it sees your front door, comes into your home, okay? Which is why, if you are, let's say, picking cucumbers out in the field, so then, even if you haven't taken trumas and maestras, you're allowed to eat those cucumbers because it hasn't fulfilled the obligations of gemar malacha, rias pnei abayis, and so on. Now, midrabanan, they forbade eating bekvias, a kind of formal meal type eating. They don't allow that with untithed produce. But if it's achilas arai, if it's kind of snacking, like happenstance eating, just a little munching on something while you're doing your thing, that is, yes, permitted, even l'halacha l'maisa, of produce before it's been tithed. If it hasn't yet hit gemar l'halacha, and it's a arai, just like a snack, and hasn't come into your home, fine. So I told you midoraisa when the requirement to tithe kicks in. There are a number of rabbinic alternatives, okay? The Rambam actually lists five alternatives, where even though it didn't have Gemar Malacha and Riyas Pnei Abayis, it's still obligated in Midrabanan at that point to take Maestros before you can eat any of this produce at all. And that is, number one, if you cook the food. Number two, if you sell the food. Number three, if you pickle the food. Those all indicate that you're basically, this is not going to ever get to the other stages of finishing malach and coming to your home, so instead you have to do it then. Also, if you took trumas already, you have to take maestros as well. And finally, this is the fifth and final one, which is Shabbos. On Shabbos, all of your eating is considered to be kavua. Since eating is a mitzvah on Shabbos, the pasuk says you'll call Shabbos an oneg, v'karas l'Shabbos oneg. There's a mitzvah to eat the sudas. All you're eating on Shabbos is considered to be kavua, not arai, and therefore you can't eat any produce that hasn't been tithed on Shabbos. So, what does that mean? Let's just say, for example, you got a family, and the family they love pickles, and they have in their backyard a cucumber patch, and they make their pickles and they eat them, and they love their pickles. They don't want to waste their effort on eating cucumbers. That's not what you want to eat. You want to eat pickles. But let's just say, so therefore they could eat their cucumbers whenever they want, arai, because that's not Gemar Malacha. But if you want to eat cucumbers from your backyard on Shabbos, all of a sudden now the obligation to tithe them kicks in, because Shabbos makes the eating even of cucumbers to be also kavua. Okay? Even though it didn't have Gemar Malacha, because you were planning on pickling these things. Okay? So here's the Mishnah's question. What happens if you have a special Shabbos food platter, and you put your special foods that are designated for Shabbos consumption on Friday on the platter? So what happens if the family, which only eats pickles as opposed to cucumbers, puts some raw cucumbers on the platter? They say, listen, there's no time to pickle it in time for Shabbos. We'll eat raw cucumbers this Shabbos. And someone puts the cucumbers there. They find even the nicest cucumbers they have, whatever it is, put them on the platter designated for Shabbos on Friday. Can they eat those cucumbers prior to tithing them? Do we say, listen, it's designated for Shabbos, it's as if it's already Shabbos special food and therefore needs to be tithed? Or do we say nothing doing? It's not Shabbos yet. Even though you designated it for Shabbos, it's not yet Shabbos, and you do not need yet to tithe them. You could snack on those untithed cucumbers. That's a question. And again, like all of the cases, we have Beis Hillel being strict, Beis Shammai being lenient. Therefore, Beis Shammai says, Pater, you do not need to tithe the cucumber sitting in the special platter designated for Shabbos if you're snacking on it before Shabbos comes in. Whereas Beis Hillel, Machayv, and Beis Hillel says, yes, you do have to tithe it. Meaning once you've put it on the platter designated for Shabbos, it's like Shabbos food, and you no longer can even snack on it until you do the proper tithing of Maestros, Trumas of Maestros. Okay, that's the story. Outside, inside, the Mishnah says, Kalkala says Shabbos. The basket for Shabbos food, Beshame Pochim. Beshame say, just because you put the food inside there doesn't mean it's going to be eaten for Shabbos, or it's not Shabbos yet, and therefore you're allowed to eat it. It's putzer from Trumas Meisters. You could eat it arai because it hasn't Gemar Malacha yet. Whereas Beis Hillel say, no, once it's in the Shabbos designated container, it's got the obligation to take Trumas Meisters. Even on Friday, you have to take Trumas Meisters before you eat it, even if you're going to eat it arai.